Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we are strapping in for the ultimate strategic analysis. We're looking at the 2026 Global Technology Outlook.
And we have, we've gathered a really crucial stack of sources on this one. We're covering everything from, existential crises at the world's biggest hardware company,
all the way to geopolitical chess moves playing out in the global chip market.
Our mission here isn't just to report the news. It's to pull out the strategic nuggets for you. We're going to connect the dots between Apple's huge hardware redesign, the explosive debut of a Chinese chip maker, and this massive economic pivot to subscriptions.
A pivot that NVIDIA is really spearheading. It all signals this fundamental change in how tech is designed, sold, and I guess consumed.
Exactly. Access over ownership. That's the theme.
And differentiation over just having a default. So before we get into the really dense data, we have to start with the most dramatic story. A sign of, panic from a company that almost never shows weakness. The signal that Apple is officially killing the idea of the default iPhone. We're calling this section the crisis of the boring rectangle.
Because that's really what the standard iPhone had become, right?
Yeah.
Over the last, 3 years?
And the data just completely backs that up.
It does. We've got that report from the analyst Min-Chi Kuo, and it's pretty definitive. He's saying Apple has completely halted development on the 6.1-inch iPhone 18 standard.
The base model, just gone.
Gone. The volume seller, just pulled from the lineup.
That is a huge move. Why kill the product that's historically been the anchor?
Well, the problem was a total lack of meaningful differentiation. When you look at the iPhone 15, the 16, even the 17,
right.
The standard models just had these tiny incremental improvements. Mm-hmm. Customers who bought a Pro model 2 years ago felt almost zero need to upgrade.
The value just wasn't there. It completely collapsed.
And customers voted with their wallets.
We saw that Q4 2025 sales data, the standard non-pro models dropped something like 30% year over year.
A painful drop.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the Pro and Pro Max models weren't just steady.
They're the only growth engine.
Exactly. Hmm. They accounted for a massive 65% of all revenue. Consumers were pretty clearly saying, look, if I'm upgrading, I want the best features, or I'm just keeping what I have.
So that middle-of-the-road $800 generic iPhone was just getting squeezed out.
It was actively cannibalizing sales, yeah. Hmm. So if the default iPhone is dead, what's the new plan for 2026?
It seems like it's built entirely around forcing the customer to make a real choice.
Precisely. They're creating three very distinct value propositions. So at the high end, you still have the iPhone 18 Pro and Pro Max.
The powerhouses.
Right. Titanium build, triple cameras, top-tier chip. That's the model that sells power.
But the really interesting move is what's replacing the Standard and the Plus. That's the new iPhone 18 Air.
And the Air is purely a style play. Rumors are pointing to this ultra-slim design, maybe even getting close to 5 millimeter thick.
Wow.
This device isn't selling features. It sells fashion, feel, portability. It's for the user who values form over function,
It separates them completely from the power users. And then there's the third option.
Yeah.
The long-rumored foldable.
The iPhone Fold. That's the third pillar. A totally new form factor. It's a clamshell device, and it seems specifically designed to go head-to-head with Samsung's Z Flip.
So the bottom line is, Apple is done selling a phone that just sits in the middle.
They have to compel you. Choose style, choose power, or choose a new form factor. That's how they think they can restart that upgrade cycle.
So the lesson from Apple seems to be that standing still, even if you're the market leader, is basically a death sentence. You have to differentiate.
And that lesson is echoing everywhere, especially in the home entertainment space.
Right. So moving beyond our pockets, we've got to look at how hardware is changing the living room or maybe getting rid of it.
Exactly. And Samsung didn't even wait for CES this year. They just dropped the third generation of their portable projector, the Freestyle Plus HE.
And calling it a projector almost feels like selling it short. The tech leap here is huge. I saw the specs, 800 lumens, 4K via pixel shift. Is that where the real jump is?
It absolutely is. Mm-hmm. Let's unpack those numbers. The brightness has doubled over Gen 2, hitting 800 ISO lumens.
Which for a portable device means you can actually use it with the lights on.
Right, in way more lighting conditions.
Yeah.
And crucially, it gets to 4K native resolution using pixel shift.
Huh.
For anyone who isn't deep in projector tech, what it does is it shifts each pixel diagonally 4 times faster than your eye can see.
So it's creating a 4K image from a lower res chip.
Exactly. And it's incredibly effective in these small packages. Plus, it's running on Tizen OS 9.0.
With what they're calling generative AI calibration.
Which is genius. Tizen OS is their smart TV operating system. The AI calibration uses the camera to scan the color of your wall and then instantly adjust the color balance.
So no more weird green tint if you're projecting on a beige wall.
None of that.
Yeah.
It's instant smart utility. But the real technical win, the thing that used to only be in high-end home cinema gear, is how they solved the contrast problem.
The Lumen War.
Yeah, that's the laser LED hybrid light source. Portables used to just use LEDs, which were bright but gave you those washed-out grayish blacks.
Okay.
By adding a laser component, you get way higher energy density. This tech was only in, like, $5,000 professional units before.
And now it's in a handheld device, giving it a 30% better contrast ratio. That's massive.
It is. And that power, combined with the portability, leads right into their TV killer angle. They've deepened their partnership with Microsoft.
Right. So the Xbox app runs natively on it.
Natively on its own gaming silicon. So you just grab a Bluetooth controller, point this thing at a wall, and you're running a 300-inch Series X experience.
That fits in a backpack.
It's positioned as the flexible, experience-driven alternative to a big, expensive, fixed TV. It's that same theme again, right? Gen Z prioritizing flexible access over rigid ownership. And that whole pivot to access relies completely on the underlying compute power. Which brings us to the biggest story of the day, really. The chip wars.
The infrastructure wars. And we just saw an explosive result of that yesterday. The IPO for Baron Technology, a Chinese GPU maker, their stock price doubled on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange.
And that's not just investor hype. That's real market excitement rooted in desperation and some legitimate innovation.
How so?
Well, unlike some others, Baron developed a completely proprietary architecture for their new BR100 chip. And this chip is aimed directly at the AI market that NVIDIA completely dominates.
So how does the BR100 actually stack up against the industry leader?
The claim is pretty incredible. They're saying the BR100 offers 16-bit floating point performance that's equivalent to 90% of NVIDIA's top-of-the-line H100.
Okay, for listeners who aren't training LLMs, why is 16-bit floating point so important?
It's all about balancing speed and memory. When you're training these huge AI models, you have to store billions of parameters. Using 16-bit means you use half the memory of 32-bit, so you can train much bigger models much faster.
Without losing too much precision.
Exactly.
So 90% of the performance of the best chip on the market, at what cost?
This is the strategic dagger. The BR100 costs just one-third the price of the H100.
Wow.
So Chinese tech giants, Baidu, Alibaba, you name it, they've been starved of NVIDIA chips because of the U.S. export bans. All that pent-up demand is what fueled that 100% IPO pop.
And the signal that sends to Washington has to be enormous. Sanctions were meant to slow them down, but this just accelerates what they call indigenization.
It proves they can develop domestic alternatives. The geopolitical consequence is clear. If Byron can maintain their production yield rates, and they're using Snack's 7-millimeter process, which is getting better,
then NVIDIA is at risk of permanently losing a massive market.
A $50 billion Chinese market, potentially.
Mm.
Now, that reliance on SESMIC is still the big question mark. It's their bottleneck for going global compared to, say, TSMC.
But for their domestic market, it might be enough.
It might be. And this threat forces NVIDIA to speed up its own pivot away from just being a hardware company.
And toward being a service provider. They're betting the future isn't about owning the best GPU, but subscribing to it.
Which brings us to GeForce NW Ultimate. This is the counter move. They've completed these massive Super POD server upgrades.
Meaning subscribers, for $20 a month, are now running on RTX 5080 class hardware.
That is literally bleeding edge next generation performance. The reports are just staggering. People are streaming Cyberpunk 2077 with full overdrive ray tracing at 4K.
And getting a locked 90 frames per second.
A locked 90. That's performance beyond what even the PS5 Pro is expected to do.
But how did they solve the latency problem, the stutter, the lag? That was always the killer for cloud gaming.
The secret sauce is Cloud GSYNC. And it's not just marketing. It's a real technical solution. GSYNC is a technology that, well, it synchronizes your monitor's refresh rate precisely with the frame output from the server.
So it eliminates that disconnect.
It eliminates the stutter, the input lag, all the things that made cloud gaming feel unresponsive. They've basically solved the last major technical hurdle.
So let's just look at the money here. The report has this brutal calculation. Building an RTX 5080 PC right now would cost you, what, $3,500?
About that, just for the tower? Meanwhile, 5 years of GeForce NW Ultimate costs you $1,200.
It makes owning the hardware an almost irrational financial decision.
For anyone with good internet,
yeah.
It just makes less and less sense to deal with the physical box, the heat, the noise, the upgrades. NVIDIA is making their own best hardware irrelevant to most consumers.
And that whole strategic pivot, this reliance on access, it depends entirely on one thing, ubiquitous connectivity.
If you can't get a signal, the whole subscription model just falls apart.
Which brings us to the aerospace breakthrough that is rapidly making the idea of a no-signal dead zone obsolete.
Right. SpaceX just deployed the newest batch of Starlink satellites, the direct-to-cell V3 generation. They have these huge proprietary giant antennas.
And the immediate impact has already been tested successfully in the U.S., right?
Correct. Initial tests are out. T-Mobile users can now send and receive SMS texts from places that were total dead zones before. Remote national parks, disaster areas.
That's a huge safety and connectivity win on its own.
A massive one. And it's just the start.
What's the timeline for actual high-speed data?
They're scheduling a rollout for mid-2026. Equivalent to 4G speeds. I mean, sure. Think about that. When there's no such thing as a dead zone anymore, the entire operational landscape for every industry just changes.
Okay, so while that global bandwidth is expanding, let's do a quick check on the financial currents. What's happening in crypto? It's always a good leading indicator for this stuff.
The trend here is just unmistakably institutionalization. And it's being driven by real utility now. We saw Solana, SOL, break that key $210 resistance level.
And that's being fueled by a surge in Web3 gaming transactions, right? Why Solana specifically for gaming?
It's the architecture. Solana's speed and low fees are perfect for the kind of constant, fast microtransactions you need in games. Buying assets, making small payments. Older blockchains just can't handle that affordably.
And there are rumors of a big partnership coming.
A huge one. A MasterCard partnership for direct in-dApp payments. That's amplifying the buzz.
Meanwhile, on the Ethereum side, Vitalik Buterin was just tweeting about the upcoming Pectra upgrade.
Yeah, Pectra is all about optimization. It's designed to further reduce gas fees for layer twos.
So for things like Polygon or Arbitrum, which are built on top of Ethereum?
Exactly. By making that base layer cheaper, the entire ecosystem gets faster and cheaper for everybody. It reduces the main bottleneck for real consumer adoption.
Speaking of adoption, the biggest institutional buzz is around BlackRock's filing for a crypto basket ETF.
This is the event everyone is watching. If a basket ETF gets approved, which would track, say, the top five digital assets,
it unlocks a massive amount of corporate money that's just been sitting on the sidelines.
Billions. It gives institutional investors a clean, regulated way in without having to manage private keys or worry about single asset risk. It's the final step to bringing crypto into the traditional financial world.
So if we have to summarize this whole deep dive, 2026 really looks like it's defined by three huge shifts. First, product design is now totally driven by differentiation. The default option is dead, as Apple just painfully demonstrated.
Second, geopolitical pressure is accelerating technological independence. It's making companies like Byron Technology real threats to the incumbents in the West.
And third, the subscription model, which is being supercharged by connectivity leaps like Starlink, is just dissolving the financial argument for owning expensive hardware.
It's a complete reordering of the tech world.
So if you put all of that together, the ubiquitous connectivity from SpaceX, the instant access to high-end compute from NVIDIA, what's the biggest implication for you?
Well, it raises a really important question for you, the listener.
Huh?
If 4K, 90 frames per second gaming is available to anyone with $20 a month and a decent internet connection, is high-end local hardware your phone with a massive processor, your dedicated gaming PC, is it all becoming obsolete faster than we think?
Does the chip inside your device even matter anymore? Or is it only the connection coming into it?
It's something to mull over this week.
An existential question for sure. And while you're mulling that over, if you are looking for something to check out on your GeForce and NW subscription, we did flag a couple of PC titles that really push those limits. First, check out Doomcrawl. It's a turn-based strategy roguelike. It's punishingly difficult, but it's maybe the best adaptation of Frank Herbert's world we've ever seen.
And second, there's Star Rupture. It's this chaotic mix of base building and tower defense where you're fighting thousands of alien bugs.
The destruction physics on Unreal Engine 5 are just spectacular. It's a great way to test the power of that RTX 5080 you're renting in the cloud.
Excellent recommendations. A good way to test out the future. Until next time.
We'll catch you on the next deep dive.